Chapter 3. Bucks and a turtle, which come herewith. My worthy colleague, who was so liberal last year of his soup to the poor, will not, I trust, refuse to taste a little of Alderman Birch's tis offered on my part with hearty goodwill. Hey for the sixth, and vive la joya. Ver, my dear Heeltop, your faithful, Dot Pit Scully. P.S.S. Of course this letter is strictly private. Say that the venison, etc. came from a well-wisher to Oldborough. This amazing letter was published, in defiance of Mr. Scully's injunctions, by the enthusiastic Heeltop, who said, bluntly, in a preface, that he saw no reason why Mr. Scully should be ashamed of his action, and he, for his part, was glad to let all friends at Oldborough know of it. The illusion about the Gorgon soup was killing. 13 paupers in Oldborough had, it was confidently asserted, died of it. Lady Gorgon, on the reading of this letter, was struck completely dumb. Sir George Gorgon was wild. 10 dozen of champagne was he obliged to send down to the Organ Arms, to be added to the festival. He would have stayed away if he could, but he dared not. At 9 o'clock, he in general's uniform, his wife in blue satin and diamonds, his daughters in blue crepe and white roses, his niece, Lucy Gorgon, in white muslin, his son, George Augustus Frederick Grimsby Gorgon, in a blue velvet jacket, sugar loaf buttons, and nankeens, entered the north door of the ballroom, to much cheering, and the sound of, "God save the king." At that very same moment, and from the south door, issued William Pitt Scully Esquire, M.P.P., and his staff. Mr. Scully had a brand new blue coat and brass buttons, buff waistcoat, white kerseymere tights, pumps with large rosettes, and pink silk stockings. This wool, said he to a friend, was grown on Oldborough sheep, this cloth was spun in Oldborough looms, these buttons were cast in an Oldborough manufactory, these shoes were made by an Oldborough tradesman, this heart first beat in Oldborough town, and pray heaven may be buried there. Could anything resist a man like this? John Perkins, who had come down as one of Scully's aides-de-camp, in a fit of generous enthusiasm, leaped on a whist table, flung up a pocket handkerchief, and shrieked, "Cully forever!" Heeltop, who was generally drunk, fairly burst into tears, and the grave tradesman and Whig gentry, who had dined with the member at his inn, and accompanied him thence to the Organ Arms, lifted their deep voices and shouted, "Hear! Gee good! Bravo!" exclamation point noble! Scully forever! Gee God bless him! And, The scene was tumultuously affecting. And when young Perkins sprang down from the table, and came blushing up to the member, that gentleman said, "Thank you, Jack. Thank you, my boy. Thank you," in a way which made Perkins think that his supreme cup of bliss was quaffed, that he had but to die. For that life had no other such joy in store for him. Scully was Perkins' Napoleon. He yielded himself up to the attorney, body and soul. Whilst this scene was going on under one chandelier of the ballroom, beneath the other scarlet little General Gorgon, sumptuous Lady Gorgon, the daughters and niece Gorgons, were standing surrounded by their Tory court, who affected to sneer and titter at the Whig demonstrations which were taking place. What a ho with smell of whiskey! Lisped Cornet Fitch, of the Dragoons, to Miss Lucy, confidentially. NDCs are what they call Whigs, are they? He. They are drunk, me, drunk, by, said the general to the mayor. Which is Scully? Said Lady Gorgon, lifting her glass gravely. She was at that very moment thinking of the syllabubs. Is it that tipsy man in the green coat, or that vulgar creature in the blue one? La, my lady, said the mayoress, have you forgotten him? Why, that's him in blue and buff. And a monstrous fine man too, said Cornet Fitch. Wish we had him in our troop. Heth 6 feet three, if heth an inch. Ain't he, General? No reply. And heavens! Mama, shrieked the three Gorgons in a breath, see, one creature is on the whist table. Oh, the wretch! I'm sure he's very good looking, said Lucy, simply. Lady Gorgon darted at her an angry look, and was about to say something very contemptuous, when, at that instant, John Perkins' shout taking effect, Master George Augustus Frederick Grimsby Gorgon, not knowing better, incontinently raised a small shout on his side. "Here! Good! Bravo!" exclaimed he, "Scully forever! Hooray ay!" and fell skipping about like the wicks opposite. "Silence, you brute you!" groaned Lady Gorgon, and seizing him by the shirt frill and coat collar, carried him away to his nurse, who, with many other maids of the Whig and Tory parties, stood giggling and peeping at the landing place. Fancy how all these small incidents augmented the heap of Lady Gorgon's anger and injuries. She was a dull, phlegmatic woman for the most part, and contented herself generally with merely despising her neighbors. But oh, what a fine act of hatred raged in her bosom for victorious Scully! At this moment Mr. Perkins had finished shaking hands with his Napoleon. Napoleon seemed bent upon some tremendous enterprise. He was looking at Lady Gorgon very hard. "She's a fine woman," said Scully, thoughtfully. He was still holding the hand of Perkins. And then, after a pause, "Gad! I think I'll try." "Try what, sir?" "She's a deuced fine woman," burst out again the tender solicitor. "I will go. Springer, tell the fiddlers to strike up." Springer scuttled across the room, and gave the leader of the band a knowing nod. Suddenly, "God Save the King" ceased, and Roger de Coverley began. The rival forces eyed each other. Mr. Scully, accompanied by his friend, came forward, looking very red, and fumbling two large kid gloves. "He's going to ask me to dance," hissed out Lady Gorgon, with a dreadful intuition, and she drew back behind her lord. "Be it, madam, then dance with him," said the general. "Aren't you see, that the scoundrel is carrying it all his own way? Him, and him, and him." All of which dashes the reader may fill up with oaths of such strength as may be requisite. "General!" cried Lady Gorgon, but could say no more. Scully was before her. "Madam!" exclaimed the liberal member for Oldborough, "in a moment like this, I say that is that on the present occasion your ladyship unaccustomed as I am poo, so will your ladyship give me the distinguished honor and pleasure of going down the country dance with your ladyship?" An immense heave of her ladyship's ample chest was perceptible. Yards of blonde lace, which might be compared to a foam of the sea, were agitated at the same moment, and by the same mighty emotion. The river of diamonds which flowed round her ladyship's neck, seemed to swell, and to shine more than ever. The tall plumes on her ambrosial head bowed down beneath the storm. In other words, Lady Gorgon, in a furious rage, which she was compelled to restrain, trembled, drew up, and bowing majestically, said, "Sir, I shall have much pleasure." With this, she extended her hand. Scully, trembling, thrust forward one of his huge kid gloves, and led her to the head of the country dance. John Perkins, who I presume, had been drinking pretty freely, so as to have forgotten his ordinary bashfulness, looked at the three Gorgons in blue, then at the pretty smiling one in white, and stepping up to her, without the smallest hesitation, asked her if she would dance with him. The young lady smilingly agreed. The great example of Scully and Lady Gorgon was followed by all dancing men and women. Political enmities were forgotten. Whig voters invited Tory voters' wives to the dance. The daughters of reform accepted the hands of the sons of conservatism. The reconciliation of the Romans and Sabins was not more touching than this sweet fusion. Whack whack! Springer clapped his hands, and the fiddlers, adroitly obeying the cheerful signal, began playing Roger de Coverley louder than ever. I do not know by what extraordinary charm, nescia qua praeter solidum, etc., but young Perkins, who all his life had hated country dances, was delighted with this one, and skipped and laughed, pouseting, crossing, down the middling, with his merry little partner, till every one of the bettermost sort of the 39 couples had dropped panting away, and till the youngest Miss Gorgon, coming up to his partner, said in a loud, hissing, scornful whisper, "Lucy, Mama thinks you have danced quite enough with this person." And Lucy, blushing, starting back, and looking at Perkins, in a very melancholy way, made him a little curtsy, and went off to the Gorgonian party with her cousin. Perkins was too frightened to lead her back to her place, too frightened at first, and then too angry. "Urson," said he. His soul swelled with a desperate republicanism. He went back to his patron more of a radical than ever. He found that gentleman in the solitary tea room, pacing up and down before the observant landlady and handmaidens of the organ arms, wiping his brows, gnawing his fingers, his ears looming over his stiff white shirt collar as red as fire. Once more the great man seized John Perkins' hand as the latter came up. "The aristocrats!" roared the ex-follower of Squaredo's. "And so say I, but what's the matter, sir? What's the matter? Why, that woman, that infernal, haughty, straight-laced, cold-blooded brewer's daughter. I loved that woman, sir. I kissed that woman, sir, 20 years ago. We were all but engaged, sir. We walked for hours and hours, sir, us and the governess. I've got a lock of her hair, sir, among my papers now, and tonight, would you believe it? As soon as she got to the bottom of the set, away she went. Not one word would she speak to me all the way down. And when I wanted to lead her to her place, and asked her if she would have a glass of negus, 'Sir, apostrophe,' says she, 'I have done my duty, I bear no malice. But I consider you a traitor to Sir George Gorgon's family, a traitor and an upstart. I consider your speaking to me as a piece of insolent vulgarity, and beg you will leave me to myself.' Apostrophe, apostrophe, there's her speech, sir. 20 people heard it, and all of her Tory set too. I'll tell you what, Jack. At the next election I'll put you up. Oh, that woman! That woman! And to think that I love her still." Here Mr. Scully paused, and fiercely consoled himself by swallowing 3 cups of Mrs. Rinser's green tea. The fact is, that Lady Gorgon's passion had completely got the better of her reason. Her ladyship was naturally cold, and artificially extremely squeamish, and when this great red-faced enemy of hers looked tenderly at her through his red little eyes, and squeezed her hand and attempted to renew old acquaintance, she felt such an intolerable disgust at his triumph, at his familiarity, and at the remembrance of her own former liking for him, that she gave utterance to the speech above correctly reported. The Tories were delighted with her spirit, and Cornet Fitch, with much glee, told the story to the general, but that officer, who was at whist with some of his friends, flung down his cards, and coming up to his lady, said briefly, "Madam, you are a fool. I will not stay here to be bearded by that disgusting man. Mr. Fitch, call my people. Henrietta, bring Miss Lucy from that Lenendroper with whom she is dancing. I will not stay, General, once for all." Henrietta ran, she hated her cousin. Cornet Fitch was departing. "Stop, Fitch," said Sir George, seizing him by the arm. "You are a fool, Lady Gorgon," said he, "and I repeated a fool. This fellow Scully is carrying all before him. He has talked with everybody, laughed with everybody, and you, with your infernal airs, a brewer's daughter, by, must sit like a queen, and not speak to a soul. You've lost me 1 seat of my borough, with your infernal pride, 1,500 a year, by Jove. And you think you will bully me out of another. No, madam, you shall stay, and stay supper too. And the girls shall dance with every cursed chimney sweep and butcher in the room. They shall confound me." Her ladyship saw that it was necessary to submit, and Mr. Springer, the master of the ceremonies, was called and requested to point out some eligible partners for the young ladies. One went off with a wig auctioneer, another figured in a quadrille with a very liberal apothecary, and the third, Miss Henrietta, remained. "Hallo, you, sir!" roared the little general to John Perkins, who was passing by. John turned round and faced him. "You were dancing with my niece just now. Show us your skill now, and dance with one of my daughters. Stand up, Miss Henrietta Gorgon, mister, what's your name?
My name, said John, with marked and majestic emphasis, is Perkins.
And he looked towards Lucy, who dared not look again.
Miss Gorgon, Mr. Perkins.
There, now go and dance.
Mr. Perkins regrets, madam, said John, making a bow to Miss Henrietta, that he is not able to dance this evening.
I am this moment obliged to look to the supper, but you will find, no doubt, some other person who will have much pleasure.
Go to, sir,
screamed the general, starting up and shaking his cane.
Calm yourself, dearest George, said Lady Gorgon, clinging fondly to him.
Fitch twiddled his mustaches.
Miss Henrietta Gorgon stared with open mouth.
The silks of the surrounding dowagers rustled, the countenances of all looked grave.
I will follow you, sir, wherever you please, and you may hear of me whenever you like, said Mr. Perkins, bowing and retiring.
He heard little Lucy sobbing in a corner. He was lost at once, lost in love. He felt as if he could combat 50 generals. He never was so happy in his life.
The supper came, but as that meal cost 5 shillings a head, General Gorgon dismissed the 4 spinsters of his family homewards in the carriage, and so saved himself £1.
This added to Jack Perkins' wrath. He had hoped to have seen Miss Lucy once more. He was a steward, and, in the general's teeth, would have done his duty. He was thinking how he would have helped her to the most delicate chicken wings and blancmanges, how he would have made her take champagne. Under the noses of indignant aunt and uncle, what glorious fun it would have been. Out of place as Mr. Scully's present was, and though Lady Gorgon and her party sneered at the vulgar notion of venison and turtle for Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.